Hey, happy New Year, Stillman.
Buenas noches, Dave.
I know the New Year's been here for a while, but I'm still so excited.
It just never gets old. This year is new.
Yeah, I don't anticipate it getting old anytime soon. I'm loving the new year. Things are going great for me in the new year. I had a cheeseburger today. I'm
Ooh.
happy. Steel, we once again, this is a record for you. You have a friend back.
He
We
came
he
back
actually
on.
came
He
back.
came back. He came back. First time it's happened. Usually my friends are one and done. And I've, like, the last couple guests I've had on the pod, they've moved away. Oliver no longer lives in Madison. Julia no longer lives in Madison. They all just like, that's enough. I gotta get out of town.
Better get out of town. I don't want to be on that podcast again. Is
It's
that what
that
they're
guy. If I just see him and it makes me want to throw up. So,
So,
those are
Aaron,
direct
you're
quotes,
back.
by the way.
How you doing?
I'm doing
Yeah.
well.
Yeah, you
New
having a
Year's
good
treating
New
you
Year?
well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my birthday's in next week, actually, so I will be getting older.
You've got to be in your 30s just by the appearance of what's going on with you.
I don't know whether to take that as a compliment or what.
For the listeners at home, I would say Aaron is a dead ringer for a mid-career Andre Agassi. Was that fair?
That's fine with me.
Yeah. Kid was married to a
Andre Agassi.
supermodel.
Yeah, super handsome. So, guys, I'm excited for what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about our New Year's resolutions a little bit. We've got a very special segment that came to me in a dream. We're going to discuss presidential hairstyles. And we're going to make some predictions for this new year.
Yes.
And actually, we might make some predictions for the distant future as well. And we're going to talk about To the Limits, some of our stories of extreme human achievement. And of course, we've got some Unchained Melodies and some book wisdom for you. So, Steele, do you have any New Year's resolutions this year?
Yeah, number one, lose 15 to 20 pounds.
That's real original.
I mean, I just want to say it out loud because I need to do it. I've gained as much weight as my infant son gained in the last year, probably, and that's that. I'm at the tipping point. I bought a set of glass scales from the Costco. I got it. I'm almost to 200, and it's more than I need to be carrying right now. I'm exercising a couple times a week already for a couple hours. I'm eating vegetarian, healthy, but something's not right in my life because I'm heavier than I need to be. Oh,
So my
boy.
mom is a vegetarian, a vegan now, I guess.
Nice.
But she swears that if you do plant-based diet, you'll lose tons of weight. So
I definitely did at one point. I'm eating mostly a toddler leftover diet right now. So that could be a contributor.
that's my wife's primary diet as well, and she's gained like 40 pounds. So, I mean, you gotta be
She's
careful.
also pregnant with twins, but
I'm just reporting. I'm letting you know, Steele. It's not necessarily the best choice.
okay. Well, that's my first one. I'll come back. I got some other ones, but I want to hear some other. Since I'm not so original, let's inspire me, Mr. Creative.
What do you got, Aaron?
So last year, I made a pact with myself that I wasn't going to post any political posts on Facebook
Thank you,
because it
by the
seems
way.
like that is all Facebook is now,
You've been such a
honestly.
good follow.
Oh, thank you. That's what I tried to do, honestly. So this year, I'm also trying to take it off Twitter, which is a little harder, but because Twitter's kind of more of an impulse thing. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
And when you feel like Trump needs support, it's hard to hold back.
It is
It's hard to
hard.
hold back opinions when you're seeing that this guy needs you in his corner.
People just don't
Yeah,
understand. They just don't get the genius.
that's mainly my problem. People hate my Trump support, so.
So still, in place of a New Year's resolution, I have just a short story to share with you. to explain why I don't necessarily have a New Year's resolution this year.
Okay.
So have either of you guys ever seen the movie Dirty Dancing?
Of course.
No.
It's true. I haven't.
Okay. So only one of you is then familiar with like the animalistic sexual charisma of Patrick Swayze in that movie.
I thought you were gonna is that the one with John Lithgow? I thought you were gonna say John Lithgow.
No, this is Patrick Swayze.
And that's not even his name, is it? Lithgow. Anyway. It's Lithgow. Whatever. Just John was right.
I was just trying to ignore you still. Like, you have no opinion that's valid in this matter.
I'm done. I'm out. Okay. Tell your story, Dave.
Okay. So a number of years ago, me and my friend Howard, that of course you know still, we sat down with a couple girls and we watched Dirty Dancing. And we both were moved by it. And the girls we were with, it didn't increase their interest in us whatsoever. Because in comparison to Patrick Swayze, we're just a couple of like scumbag losers. And so Howard got home that night. He wrote on a piece of paper, "Become Patrick Swayze." And he put that on his door. And for the next like month, that was his goal, to do everything to become Patrick Swayze. But naturally, you can't achieve that goal. No human being can achieve that goal other than Patrick Swayze. He's reached the pinnacle of animalistic sexual charisma. No one else can get there. So he set a goal for himself that he had to fail. There's no way that New Year's resolution could be fulfilled because no one can do that. Only one man did it.
Does it worry you that Patrick Swayze is dead now?
He's like a phoenix. He burns so brightly.
He was cremated, so...
Wow. This is coming full circle. He's got an answer for everything. You got any more resolutions, Aaron?
I do, actually. This is one I tried to do this last year, and I want to continue doing it. But I just pick up at least one piece of litter while I'm out running anytime I go running. I don't know. Makes me feel good.
Keeps a smile on the running face.
Yeah.
That's kind of beautiful. I like that. It's simple. It's small. It makes an impact.
That's adorable. Steele, do you have anything that isn't the same New Year's resolution as 80% of America?
Nope. So I wrote... this year, one of my New Year's resolutions... Yeah, that's not true. I guess this is 80% of America. But this year, I solemnly swear to watch 3 Vin Diesel movies.
Yes! You've joined us. You're with 100% of America.
At my first 3, I'm going to watch 3 this year. I'm going to
watch... Do you know which
ones? I'm going to watch Fast and the Furious.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to watch Iron Giant, which Dave recommended. And I think it may be XXX, the third one that I'm going to watch. And it's because it's on Netflix, and I could get that one right away. That's probably gonna be my first. You recommended Riddick, I think, Dave, as my third, but I'm gonna go with XXX.
They're working on a sequel for XXX right now, so you want to get in on the ground floor so you understand the intricacies of the plot when the sequel comes out.
The mythology.
Cool. So there you go. That's my other resolution. Anybody want to top that? Anyone else gonna do something else?
I can't top that still.
I think that's a great one.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's
lose weight and watch more Vin Diesel.
And the thing is that watching Vin Diesel will inspire you to lose weight. So actually the two New Year's resolutions are joining as one, and you'll see the benefit.
I have a New Year's resolution. I'm in.
So guys, I woke up this morning. I don't know if this came to me in a dream, but I feel like it must have. I knew that it would be important to discuss the greatest presidential hairstyles of all time.
I had the same dream. I really did.
Now, I'm going to be honest. Some of the inspiration came from Aaron's inspiration for Facebook, Donald Trump. I was just looking at a picture of him and trying to understand what's happening. I even read some articles and I couldn't understand it. So I wanted to see if there's any kind of precedent for it.
I watched a YouTube video once. It was like this old beef jerky weathered dude in like a satin vest. And he was showing, he's this terribly balded man with very long hair in the back. And he showed over like a painstaking process of like 15 minutes how he took his super long hair and combed it and hairsprayed it so that it looked like a pompadour. He transformed like total male pattern baldness into like your hair, essentially, Dave. Mm. And every time I see Donald Trump, I think of that video and I think like, I bet you Donald Trump is a subscriber to that guy's YouTube channel and watches that to like pump himself up like before he gives campaign speeches.
But he wouldn't be the first U.S. president God willing, he's elected, to have an issue with baldness and hair. But I went through all the presidents that we have, and I found my five favorite. Should we count down?
Let's go like from five to one. Let's go from five to one. Let's reveal.
So number five.
Hold on. There's an honorable mention, Dave.
Okay, would you like to share
this one? Yeah, this one didn't crack Dave's list, but it's close. Everyone knows this man as the president who was so fat he became stuck in the White House bathtub. But William Howard Taft was a notable president for more than just that. He's the first political figure that really pioneered what is now known today as the wounded walrus look. And if you look at the old William Howard Taft, you'll notice a couple of things right away. One is, by the standard of his era, there was enough Taft for like three people. And so he's got these luxurious ocean of chins. And he's like, you know what? Don't stare there. Stare here. And he grew this incredible walrus mustache over, you know, like middle third of his face, really. And then you just keep rising up. And he's got what appears to be like, in some pictures, it almost looks like it's slicked back, like it's pulled into a very tight, tiny ponytail. You can't see the back of it, but I would be willing to wager that he's got like a little, you know, those old kind of salt and pepper grain balding dudes that still have like the 2-inch ponytail in the back and a little tight ball. I'm pretty sure that's what he had, with kind of like a half sort of wispy part in it. And that's an honorable mention.
We can talk about it, but he doesn't make the top five. The top five, it's hard to crack. I don't know if Trump could get in here, but we'll start with someone that you guys are familiar with, JFK, John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
And each of these signature hairstyles has a name because they're signature hairstyles. And actually, Reagan kind of tried to adopt this as well, but it's called the Handsome Man. He has the handsome face, of course. He's got the strong features, but he accentuates it all with a strong part in the side. And you'll notice he's parting it on the left side of his head, which is the strong side to part from. If you're parting it on the right, you got to reconsider.
Damn it.
Any of these presidential leaders, if you look at them, the majority
are going to part.
They're going to part left to right. So he's got the hard part. He's using a hair product. And the front, it's kind of puffed up, pushed up a little bit, as if to indicate just strength and power. If you see anyone with this hairstyle, he immediately becomes about 15 to 20% more handsome.
It's one of the thickest, most virile presidential hair heads I've ever seen. And I've seen a few presidential hair heads. That was a great sentence. We're going to keep that in the Hall of Fame.
And it's the thickness that I think is so impressive. He didn't have a lot of other options for it. He had to somehow mold this into what he did because of just the pure strength just erupting from his head.
So true. I'm looking at some pictures of presidential hair, and just as an aside, Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan look like they both part on the right, What does that mean?
They're lefties.
Jimmy Carter, first of all, single term. So, so think about that for a second. Reagan, he's using his Hollywood showmanship in order to make it happen. But you can't like take the outlier and then try and make the rule by that. You make the rule by the rest of them. Just look down the line.
Wow, Dave's got answers. So, Dave, who's number four on this presidential hair hit parade?
Okay. This is not a great president, but he made up for it with hair. This is Andrew Johnson. He took over after Lincoln.
And he's often overshadowed by the other Andrew, the Andrew Jackson. Everybody thinks of Andrew Jackson, but Andrew Johnson was also a president.
Yeah, and this man, he didn't understand how to run government. He didn't understand what he was supposed to be doing as president because he was spending most of his time taking care of his beautiful, beautiful hairstyle, which is referred to as the man bob.
Now, Dave, two questions for you. Once I clicked on the link that you sent or that you included here, and the first thought was, how did this guy steal Tommy Lee Jones's face?
True.
I looked at him, I was like, what? That's Tommy Lee Jones.
I think there's a biopic in the works starring Tommy Lee.
There really is. And second, the link said Bing.com. What the hell is wrong with you? You're using Bing? You really have moved to Snowflake, Arizona. How's the Netscape browser?
So I was on a Windows really computer. So this was the search engine that just defaulted to me, and this is the first time in the history of internet searches that Bing was better than Google. Because you just search U.S. presidents, boom, you got all 45, however many they are, lined up right in a row, headshots. Bing seemed to understand exactly why I was searching U.S. presidents. Google didn't do it. Bing did. This is so if you want to compare presidential hairstyles, you have to go to Bing.
Okay. All right, so tell me more about this man, Bob. What makes this top five presidential hair worthy?
Okay. So what you'll see is a carefully trimmed hairstyle worn long. It's covering the ears on both sides. And it's just carefully trimmed directly around the head, almost as if a large bowl was placed on it. And then the bangs, I'm certain, match the entire trimness of the cut. But because Andrew Johnson has class and style, he then uses product to slick the bangs back, indicating strength and power and just the love of his hairstyle.
Listeners, I wish with all of my heart that you had video on this podcast because Dave is molding his hair as he's describing it. And when you did the man bob, it looked, for the life of me, like a very cheap wig. You looked like the Beastie Boys video, the Sabotage, where they were wearing the fake wigs and the mustaches and driving around. That's what you looked like. Okay, so that's Andrew Johnson, the man bob. Mm-hmm. Take us to number three.
It's hard to keep this guy down. He wants to fight into the top two easy. There's no way he could take number one. But this is Franklin Pierce. He's sporting something that we like to call the curly elevator.
The curly elevator.
I don't even think they had elevators in that time, but he was ahead of his time.
It. Yeah.
Now Franklin, he's obviously he has curly hair. So he's using that he's playing it to its strengths. He's not trying to straighten his hair. He's not trying to deny what he has. He's letting it grow. It's sticking out on the sides, you know, I'd say 3 to 4 inches straight out. Then he's got a part, but he can't fully tame the curl. So as the part moves, the hair moves from the part, it begins to go upwards, almost as if elevating towards a higher, like, celestial plane. And it's just, it's breathtaking.
I would say he is the 19th century presidential Lyle Lovett, in a way. There's something about him
that's
very
perfect.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm glad that you're finding the celebrity doppelganger for each of these presidents.
I'm so tied in to people who would have been famous in the 80s and 90s. Hey. Drum roll, please. I mean, we all know who the top two are going to be. We just don't know how it's going to shake out in the official rankings.
So number two, James K. Polk.
Whoa!
This man did a lot of good for our country. And he did a lot of good that's still echoing today, hundreds of years later, because he was the man to originate a hairstyle that we all know and appreciate. His hairstyle is the original mullet.
I know everybody's thinking this, but if you look at that black and white photograph, that's like the first one that comes up when you Google him. I know I Googled instead of binging him.
Whoa, cover up the hair. Mistake.
I know. But just cover up the hair and look at the face and tell me that's not Mel Gibson. Did it again. That's your celebrity doppelganger. It's the mulleted Mel Gibson of U.S. presidents.
I think you've nailed it almost as much as he nailed the hairstyle. He's just doing what you know he's doing. He's got the mullet. If you cover up with your finger the mullet portion of his hairstyle, just looks like a normal, hey, I'm the president of the 1800s. I understand about the economy. I can work with Congress. And then boom, you look at the back of his head and he says, yeah, but on the weekends, I party.
The thing that I love about it is it's silver. He's got a silver mullet. It's just like a shock of white. Yeah. James K. Polk. All right. So there's probably not much suspense left. You all know who's coming next if you know anything about U.S. presidents. But clearly, the number one, the greatest hair ever worn by a U.S. president.
Thank you, John Adams, for what you've done for our country, for what you've done in making us a place of free society. But thank you most of all for introducing us to the Nohawk.
Please do a Google or do a Bing image search of John Adams and tell me that you don't see a Nohawk.
Oh, he's again another president. If you're president, you have to learn how to play to your strengths. He does it. He's got curly hair, and he's got nothing up on top. So what do? Do you trim it short? Do you make it not a spectacle? No. You grow it out with sweet mutton chops, and boom, you got the Nohawk.
The other great thing about John Adams is his celebrity doppelganger. Cover up that hair. You're looking at Paula Deen.
So that's your top five. Each one of those presidents, I don't think they could have been elected without the style that they chose. Any other honorable mentions from you guys, presidents' hairstyles that you enjoy?
For me, yeah. I actually, it's not so much his hair, but Warren G. Harding's eyebrows are magnificent. They're amazing. They're just these furry black caterpillars on his best presidential eyebrows ever.
Goodness, it's so true.
I don't know how Warren G. Harding ever looked not angry though with those eyebrows.
Know, right, he probably got a lot of stuff done.
Well, you know, he was only president for a short time, so he had to.
And do you guys know everyone. Warren G. Harding's celebrity doppelganger?
No, please enlighten us.
It's Sam the Eagle from The Muppets. Cover up the hair. It's basically Warren G. Harding. The one that I was a little disappointed, Dave, and maybe this doesn't register for you as much because you're surrounded by this haircut on contemporary Americans in the American Southwest, Millard Fillmore. Millard Fillmore is like Cliven Bundy is still wearing this haircut. This is like 75-year-old rancher. I just pulled some snot through it. It's slicked over to the side. It's like I'm sort of trying, but I'm definitely not. I haven't had a haircut in several months. It's the 75-year-old bachelor rancher look, and it's awesome. It's really a great look, but it's absolutely the American. You look good to Utah, you go to Arizona, and you're going to see tons of grandpas rocking the Millard Fillmore.
He's pretty much – I pretty much have that haircut still.
Like, I wasn't going to say anything, Dave, but
we're yes. Parting on the same side. I have the same haircut and style as Millard Fillmore. So, yeah, I love it.
Yeah. That's why I didn't make your top five. You just thought – you were looking in the mirror, and you're like, everybody else is – presidents, and then there's one real good looking dude. Man, Dave, that was great. Thanks for the thank you, angel visitor who visited Dave in his dream and inspired him to enrich all of our lives.
I think we are all enriched, but we need to enrich people even more. We're giving out some predictions for the new year. Anybody got something?
Yeah, let's look into our crystal ball. One thing that's going to happen for this new year, I'm going to start in my office. I'm going to say cool, cool a lot to stuff. And I'm going to try to get my coworker to start saying deep dorp, deep dorp. She's probably not going to do it, but that's going to happen. It's going to take over. It's going to start from Madison. It's going to spread. People just something terrible, something dumb happens, and people are going to start saying cool, cool. It's just going to be the thing. It's going to happen this year.
Cool, cool.
Yeah, exactly. You nailed it. Someone says something super dumb, you just follow it up with cool, cool, and you're ready to go. Case in point.
Deep dorp.
Deep dorp. Nice one, huh?
Hey, guys, it's 2016, even year. I got a good feeling we're getting an Olympics this year. I'm not sure if it's winter or summer, but it's happening, right?
Probably.
All right.
I hope it's summer. Winter one, I don't even watch. Summer ones are cool.
I think the election time, November. No. Is going to be even more unbearable than it has been in previous election cycles. And the odds that I have to block some of my family members on Facebook is pretty high.
So hold on. I didn't realize, see, this is, I'm not super in tune of politics here, but you said it's in November.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I have coherent thoughts about this.
That's when we usually vote, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I suppose that's probably true. I don't really remember. But it's crazy to me. Like, the election's 11 months away. Why have people been talking about this for already, what, 8 months now? This is absurd how long this election cycle is.
We're crazy.
So much money is wasted on this.
Yeah.
God. I was thinking, oh, yeah, people are talking about the presidential election. I'm probably going to vote in a couple months here. But no, I'm going to vote in 10 months. That's awesome.
When you have the dynamic candidates we have, it's hard not to discuss it. I find myself just every day I'm excited to talk.
Yeah.
So guys, I got a couple other predictions. I have the prediction Captain America is going to fight Iron Man this year, and my prediction is that I don't really care who wins.
Nice. You know, I'm going to be on the edge of my seat of that film, Dave. I already got my advance release tickets for that, so.
Who do you guys think is going to end up in L.A. as the football teams? What do you think?
Oh. Well, it's got to be the Raiders, right? Who are the other candidates?
The Rams.
Oh, really?
And the Chargers.
Oh, the Chargers could go. That'd be sad, though.
The Chargers will probably go. It'll be the Chargers and the Rams, I think.
Oh, so two teams are going to L.A.?
I think we're going to get two, yeah.
And it's not going to be the Raiders?
No, I don't think so. This is getting really geeky, but I think they renewed their lease on their stadium, so I think they're staying put for a while.
Oh, wow. Sweet. And of course, we are huge fans of the Raiders, primarily because of Mark Davis's haircut.
Yeah. he's got a kind of modified Millard Fillmore, I would say.
That's not a Millard Fillmore. He's a lot closer to a man, Bob.
You're right. And so I'm curious about this. So growing the hair over the ears, is that for warmth? Or what's the strategy? I mean, what's the practical application there?
When you're talking style, you don't talk practical application. Come on, okay. Still.
It's aesthetics, huh?
He's got a lot of kids. He doesn't have time to cut his hair.
He does? Mark Davis has children?
Oh, I thought you were talking about...
The man, Bob? Dave. Oh, Dave, yeah. you're making fun of Dave's hair. Perfect, keep it up.
I can't really make fun of hair I don't have any, so.
Yeah, that's true enough. Our predictions for the year. This has been a great segment.
I know. We might. I predict that no one's going to want to listen to this part. But guys, what's actually way more important?
Yes.
I've got some rapid fire questions for both of you. I want an answer from Aaron and Steele. These are predictions that I think are going to hit you a lot closer to the heart. These are quick fire predictions for the year 21-16. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Best food of the year 21-16.
21-16?
Yeah, 21-16, 100 years from now. Everybody knows steam fried wasabi waffles are going to be like blowing it up in 21-16.
Nice.
I think kale will make a comeback.
Kale, I like it. If that's the best food of 21-16, it's going to be a food wasteland.
Top sport in the world, 21-16.
Handball.
Handball.
Quidditch.
Quidditch! Good call.
Ooh,
I'm excited. I would watch that. I hope my grandkids are into that.
Dominant country in the year 21-16.
Oh, Kyrgyzstan.
Oh, nice.
We'll all be speaking Chinese by then, I think.
Yeah, the population, which leads us to the next question, which Steele assured me was appropriate. Dominant race of 21-16.
The aliens.
Yeah,
an alien race.
Dominant race. Man, I don't know. Hispanics.
Yeah, I'm just not going to answer that question.
I'm going with aliens.
Aliens. So, top extinctions.
Top extinctions.
Humans.
Yeah.
Oh, they're going.
One can hope, yeah. I think it's going to be really sad to say goodbye to the – we'll lose some charismatic big cats. I think like something like the snow leopard will be gone. That'll be hard to say goodbye. I think we'll probably also say goodbye to the great white shark, sadly.
Oh.
They're going to make another Jaws sequel, and it's just going to enrage our alien overlords who are going to wipe them out with a death ray.
Are the continents going to drift back together? Are we looking at a Pangea situation?
Yeah, it's happening, but it will be more Gondwanaland this time. It won't quite be Pangea. It's going to be more in the Gondwanaland. That's my predict. That's my bold prediction.
Okay.
Aaron, if you got thoughts on the Pangea Gondwanaland debate? I know it's
that's
blown up the Reddit right now.
Millions of years away, but.
Oh, okay. Well.
So now, yeah, he doesn't think 100 years. Could we be looking at a Waterworld type situation 100 years from now?
Yes.
That could be something, yeah.
A little bit of climate change.
Kevin Costner will have gills in 100 years.
For real. He still won't be able to land a good movie role.
Guys, it was a fantastic movie. I stand by Costner on that one.
Can I ask you a question here, Dave? Are we post-apocalyptic? Apocalyptic? Are we post-apocalyptic?
I'm not sure what that word means still.
Okay, well, I just wanted to know whether we are or not.
So intriguing. Top language, 21-16.
Ooh.
Most spoken in the world.
Most spoken?
Yep. Or your personal talk.
Mandarin.
Whatever the aliens are speaking, whatever language they're speaking.
Yeah.
All right, just a handful more, and then we're going to move on here. What author from our current time will be considered a classic author in 100 years? You can't pick John Grisham because that's too easy.
J.K. Rowling.
Oh, boy. I'm going to say David Mitchell.
Are there going to be any films that still resonate 100 years from now?
Oh, 100 years.
What would you say?
Me? Yeah. Let me reach back in the vast library of films. Oh, obviously, Daylight, that's going to be a big hit. People want to remember the old Lincoln Tunnel.
Yeah, it's important. How about Aaron? Do you have real thoughts still?
No, I'm thinking. I'm trying to think of the name of a film that someone else hasn't mentioned in the show that I could contribute.
You think Star Wars lives 100 years?
I wouldn't be surprised if it did.
See, yeah, my feeling is, if you think about films from 1917 that are still being viewed, Birth of a Nation, maybe, like racist propaganda, it's not going to, my feeling is if a film lasts 100 years from now, it's a film which has almost no special effects. It just can't. Because the special effects are the thing that are going to feel the most dated most quickly. It's going to have to be a film that's driven by some part of, like, a human situation or conversation or dialogue. And to be frank, I don't think those films aren't really being made, really, on a large scale in the United States right now. And they're not appreciated by American audiences. And I don't think that they're likely to be appreciated in 100 years.
But
The Princess Bride, maybe.
As a counterpoint, I think that something like Star Wars is so ingrained into American culture that it could live that long.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's, especially the older ones. I mean, we're still watching the older ones, which you could see kind of have some dated effects. But, you know, when people, like, it's so ingrained into the culture, I don't think that shows up as much as.
Yeah, I think what's probably going to be more likely, I wouldn't be surprised if some version of Star Wars or the franchise was still being made 100 years from now. Like, they might have, that seems as likely to me. The thing that I think actually might be the 100 years from now would be something like a Pixar-type film, like an animated film, like a, maybe not Toy Story, but what about, like, WALL-E or a film like that? Mm-hmm. Might be a film like, because it's not really special effects. But it's a really widely known and loved film that involves some kind of art technique that will likely still be beautiful and appreciable in 100 years, maybe.
Yeah.
And I think a timeless
Disney
story.
Disney films have lasted a long time. They're old animations like Sorcerer's Apprentice. When was that made?
And Snow White is still watched. Yeah. Right. And same question with music. Is there anything you think that's being made today that will still be hold up in 100 years?
Obviously Wilco, Dave. Come on.
I wonder if Radiohead, I love Radiohead, and they have a pretty high level of popularity. I think that you have to have that to be able to endure for a long time.
Yeah, I think, I was thinking, actually, first thought was Radiohead. That's a band that I could imagine maybe still having some appeal 100 years. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting is that for what's survived 100 years to our date in music has not been popular music. It's been primarily like folk music.
But was folk music the popular music back then? Like, was that considered the popular music of the time or no?
Some of it could have been, but they had popular music, like stuff that was sung in music halls and musics and stuff that like would have sold copies and people would have known and sheet music would have been widely distributed. But it was the stuff that was kind of only known in regional pockets at the time that survived now and people appreciate. I don't know why that is, and I don't know if that's a trend that's going to continue, but that would be really interesting to imagine like some kind of – like if it was crunk or like trap or like some like really kind of minor regional – genre, micro genre of music is what 100 years from now, like people look back and like, wow, they were making that and they've like recovered it and they really appreciate this rustic primitive American music or something. I don't know.
I think it'll be interesting. But now compared to 100 years ago, there's so many more artistic things, popular culture things produced than there were 100 years ago. Yeah. There's just a flood of stuff. So I think it'll be hard for anything to still resonate in 100 years.
Or survive, yeah. Electronic dance music is definitely my. Actually, I'm going to revise my answer. EDM, that's what's going to survive 100 years.
Katy Perry.
Yeah, yep.
Final question, maybe most important one. Are robots ruling us 100 years from now?
No. I don't know. When you ruling us, what do you mean? I don't know. Yes, probably.
Do you mean like it has artificial intelligence taken over the Earth?
The singularity.
Enslave the human race.
Interpret the question how you wish.
No, I don't think that robots have enslaved us in 100 years.
But they're definitely driving us around. That's for sure, and that's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, maybe we have self-driving cars or something.
Certainly, I think genuinely, like technology could have crippled us in some ways within 100 years. Certainly, it probably already has. To all the listeners out there, those predictions are pretty important. I hope you take them all to heart. But let's move on to the limits. Still, this is a segment I really enjoy. We talk about just extreme human achievement, things that are impressive.
I'm really excited. I read this story and I thought we need to bring this segment back because I cannot believe it. This is the man who holds and recently broke his own record for the greatest number of push-ups completed in 1 hour. I know Dave used to do a lot of push-ups, and I don't know, Aaron, sure, if push-ups have been a part of your like fitness regime at any point in your life.
Yeah.
What would be like a real good push-up day for you at your maximum, at your peak?
Maybe 25 or 30.
Nice. That's a good day.
I think when I honestly did tons of push-ups and I, for whatever reason, I was very interested in doing push-ups, I got over a 200.
That's almost superhuman to me. I hear that and I'm like, when I was at my peak, I remember I did 40 in like one session and I rested a bit and I did like another 25 and then I worked down. So probably the most I've ever done in a day is 100, and then I like couldn't put my shirt on the next day or whatever. And I was like, that was a mistake, but I'm going to be jacked a year from now. And I never was. But this guy is a Welsh construction worker, lives in Australia. His name is Carlton Williams. He's 50 years old. And he said, I'm going to set the world record for the most push-ups completed in 1 hour. Here are the rules. Your hands must remain flat on the floor. You have to lower your body until you have a 90-degree angle at the elbow, so like a full come down. And then you have to straighten your arm back again. That's a single push-up.
Mm-hmm.
His new record in 60 minutes is 2,221 push-ups.
That is a lot of push-ups.
He's a 50-year-old man, and he smashed his own record by almost 400. But just imagine what it might take to decide to challenge this record, what training entails. And you're like, I'm just going to do push-ups as fast as I can for 1 hour.
It's amazing. It's awesome.
That guy's two of the limits.
How you remember?
No, he's like a skinny dude. It's pretty muscular. They've got video of him without his shirt on or like a tank top doing these push-ups. Like Guinness Book of World Records is authenticated it and did the video. He said afterwards, I didn't really feel that much pain. I got a shoulder injury. That was my biggest problem. But after a while, you just get used to it. Like the mental dominance like you do of your body. You're just like, I'm just going to keep doing push-ups.
Wow.
Still, you remember my friend Ryan came on. It was a long time ago now.
Yeah.
But we did a challenge together to see how many push-ups we could do in 20 minutes. And I don't remember the number of push-ups I did. But I remember I was literally sore for a full month. Like I couldn't move my arms. It was affecting my work and stuff. It was awful.
Was it close to a 2,221 though?
Yeah, just shy. Just a little bit shy.
Yeah, well, something to aspire to. Yeah, so I read that story and I was like, I couldn't believe it. I thought you'd be appreciative, Dave, and I thought I got to bring it on the show. So there he is. Much respect, Carlton Williams.
Beautiful. I read a book a while ago, guys, about a guy solo rowing across the Atlantic Ocean. It was pretty interesting. And so I was reading up a little bit about rowing across the Atlantic Ocean.
How could you do it in a rowboat? Like, how could you carry enough supplies to cross the Atlantic Ocean?
Well, it's like an extreme sport now. These guys have these special made rowboats. There's like a cabin that they can sleep in. They bring special food, and you know they have GPS, all this stuff. And it's like an extreme sport. People do it all the time now, but they get sponsors. They do all sorts of things, and it's doable. It's just an extreme accomplishment. It's awesome.
Holy cow!
But the first guys that ever did this did it in 1896. George Harbaugh and Frank Samuelson. It's unclear if this really happened, but a newspaper offered a $10,000 prize for the first people that could row across. And so these guys decided they were going to do it. They just outfitted their rowboat. They did it together. They did it in 55 days, which was the record for 114 years. It was just broken, but not by a crew of two. It was broken by a crew of four. So they still, the first guys to ever do it in just a primitive rowboat, they still hold the record for a two-man crew for fastest Atlantic crossing.
How, you said 50-something days?
55 days.
They rowed across the Atlantic Ocean in less than 2 months, which is both amazing and also they rowed for 2 months. That's incredible.
In 1896.
Yeah.
And so one of the funny parts of this story is so they make it across, they're exhausted, people think it's great, and they catch a ride on a ship back to New York. But this ship's a coal-burning ship. It runs out of fuel. And so the captain says, all right, anything that's wood on this boat has to be burned.
No!
And these guys are like, no, you're not burning our boat. So they hop out. They're like, they're still,
they row back.
Remember, and they row back to New York the rest of the way.
That's badass. That's truly true. Were they Americans?
They were born in Norway, but they lived most of their lives in America.
Yeah, because America attracts greatness.
So those guys are awesome, and they never got the $10,000.
They don't need it. They got our respect several years after they died.
So, America attracting greatness. What greatness do you have for us, Aaron?
Yes. Speaking of greatness, last November, Shia LaBeouf. Yes, that Shia LaBeouf.
Huge fan. Huge.
He did one of his, I guess he calls them performance art. I don't know. But what he did was he basically took over this theater in New York, a movie theater, and watched all 29 of his movies in reverse chronological order for 3 days straight. And he allowed the public to come in and watch it with him. And the best part was he had a live feed of his face during this, so you could get on at all hours online and watch a live feed of Shia LaBeouf watching Shia LaBeouf. It was pretty amazing. He spent the entire time in a giant winter coat with a hoodie underneath. I don't even know how that's possible inside of a movie theater for 3 days.
Movie theaters are cold, aren't they? Aren't they famously air-conditioned? I haven't been in several years, but that's what I hear.
Well, the ones I go to are super hot, so I don't know what he's doing. At one point, he fell asleep in the aisle during Transformers 3.
Transformers 3, that's so perfect. Because isn't that like near the beginning? If he's watching in reverse chronological order, he's like a couple hours in and he just falls asleep.
In the middle of the aisle. He just rolled up his coat and fell asleep. It was, I don't know. It was fascinating. It was like the most fascinating, boring thing I've ever seen.
Wow.
Great.
I wish I could have been there during Disturbia.
Yeah. If you just Google Shia LaBeouf, all my movies, you can see all of the screen captures that everyone took of his face. And there's some great memes out there.
I think you meant you just Bing it. Dave's a Bing guy.
Oh, yeah. Bing. Bing it.
Oh, this is just inspirational. Humans truly can do amazing things, and Disturbia is underrated. So good, Shia. Thank you. So, guys, we're coming towards the end of this New Year's celebration podcast. We're celebrating 2016. We're celebrating human accomplishment. And, of course, we're going to do that with song, Unchained Melodies. We're each going to pick some songs that we think are essential if we were to host an all-night New Year's Eve party.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm excited.
This is not just an if proposition, Dave.
Oh,
shortly
no.
before my son was born, shortly before our son was born, we were house sitting and decided that we were going to have one last party before we never had ever parties again because we had a child. And we decided to host a basically all-night New Year's Eve dance party. And my wife was about 8 months pregnant, and we just invited a bunch of friends over. And here's the theme. We decided it was going to be a Y2K party, so we were going to pretend like it was 1999, about to become the year 2000. And we could only play music that had been released prior to December 31st, 1999, and everybody had to dress as if it was December 31st, 1999, and we had so much fun. I would have to say, like, if this is the conditions, Dave's first choice for the all-night New Year's Eve dance party is, like, the perfect choice for our real life.
I can't imagine that you played anything other than this song just on repeat. And this doesn't need introduction. Just play it still.
It's not actually queued up and ready, so I'm continuing my theme of being awesome at this.
Let's just pretend that you played it right then, okay?
Man, Prince is the best, Dave.
Woo! The dude can jam.
Remember that one part where it was like, yeah!
I was dreaming when I wrote this. Ah, oh, so good. Da, 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 da,
da. Isn't there something about like having a dream of presidential haircuts in that song?
In the updated version that Prince just wrote while listening to this podcast.
Man, Prince is so prolific, and obviously, no New Year's Eve dance party is complete without Prince. But I'm gonna say there's another song that no dance party, full stop, is complete without. And I know everybody knows the song and everybody's heard it a million times, but it really is. I just dropped the iPad. This song really is a great, great dance party song, and it needs to be part of any all your New Year's Eve dance party song. It's Outkast. Hey, ya.
1, 2, 3, my baby don't mess around because she loves me so, and this I know for sure.
The best part of not really ever listening to the radio or popular music is that song still sounds super fresh and exciting to me. Like, that song sounds awesome.
I'm like, man, I've only heard that song a couple of times. And, you know, everybody else is like, oh, seriously, this is the 84th millionth time. But, yeah, it's nice. It's nice. Let me some sugar. I am your neighbor. That's a great line.
What do you got, Aaron? What are you dancing to?
Something that the new year is for me, it makes me nostalgic for years past. One of my favorite songs in high school was Mo Money, Mo Problems by Notorious B.I.G. Just gets the nostalgia juices flowing for high school.
Anytime someone brings up a song that features Mace, that's instantly what I think of, the high school years. So... Here's Mo Money, Mo Problems.
Mm-hmm. sell out in the stores? You tell me who flop, who cop the blue drop, who jewels got pops, who mostly Gucci down to the blue crap. The same old pimp, mates, you know ain't nothing changed but my limp. Can't stop till I see my name on the blimp. Guarantee me and sells for the level up. You don't believe in Harlem World, nigga, double up. We don't play around, it's a bet, lay it down. Niggas didn't know me 91, bet they know me now. I'm the young Harlem nigga with the Goldie sound. Can't no PG, niggas hold me down. Cooler, school me to the game, now I know my duty. Stay humble, stay low, blow like Hootie. True pimp, niggas spend no dough on the booty. When you yell, there go mates, there go your cutie.
Classic. It's always great when it's like the background singers are the ones that are delivering the chorus. That's a bold, cool kind of move for a dance track. I'm impressed.
It's a great song. I mean, and if you watch the music video, it just makes it 100 times better.
That's true of basically every 90s R&B classic. Yes. Okay. All right.
So, guys, My next choice is about as far from 90s R&B as I could imagine. LCD Sound System. This song's like 7 minutes long. Every time I put it on, I can't help but just dance for 7 minutes. I get sweating by the end of it. It's amazing. I was at a Halloween party a few years ago, and it was just lame. No one was happy. No one was doing anything. And I'm not a dancer, but I went to the DJ, and I told him to put this on. And just the party went crazy.
You did. You performed a party miracle.
Me and LCD Sound System saved the party with "Dance Yourself Clean." Do you know this one still?
Yeah. Okay.
This is. So you might want to like fast forward at some point because it's awesome, but.
Deep dorp, deep dorp. Killing it can only make it worse. Sort of makes it breed. Present company accepting presently. We all expect the worst. It works just like a knee. Present company excluded in the night. Okay, I'm gonna zoom in deeper here.
I'm pretty sure I've hurt myself dancing to this song.
Okay, here's my second choice, my final choice. This one was really torn up. And although Shoop by Salt-N-Pepa is a great song, an even greater dance party song, this is one that my son Cedar really, really gets into. And for that reason, and mostly for that reason, I'm playing Missy Elliott, Get Your Freak On.
Mississippi putting it down. I'm the hottest round. I told y'all mother. Y'all can stop me now, listen to me now. I'm lasting 20 rounds, and if you want me, then come on get me now. Is you with me now, then biggie, biggie bounce. I know you dig the way I switch my style.
Holla, holla.
People sing around, now people gather around, now people jump around. Tim Lambert has it 20 years ago. What the dealio? Now what the
I don't know how to describe it, but that for me is like that particular generation's Thriller.
Okay. I have to be honest. While that song was playing just now, I was working my way backwards through Shia LaBeouf's movie filmography, and that was what was making me smile so much. Like, I was really enjoying the song, but yeah.
You're getting your freak on, but in a different kind of way, huh? So yeah, the Missy Elliott. And if you want to talk about great music videos, watch that one. Close us out, Aaron. What's the song that we need to have at our New Year's Eve dance party?
So, speaking of great music videos.
All right.
And so the new year is quite an inspirational time. And I couldn't think of a more inspirational song than Miley Cyrus's Wrecking Ball.
Nice.
Oh.
We chained our hearts in vain. We jumped, never asking why. We kissed, I fell under your spell of love no one could deny. Don't you ever say I just walked away. I will always want you.
Just Happy New Year. Boom. That's like...
Seriously.
That's like, send everybody home. Party's over.
I like to be the guy at the party that sticks something on that everyone's like, what?
And then halfway in there, like, I can't stop crying. I can't stop dancing. You changed my life.
I don't want to admit that I like this, but I do.
Yeah. You know, this is a little sad, but I don't believe I know who Miley Cyrus is, but I had never heard that song until right now. I had heard it referenced a million times, but it's great.
You should definitely go watch the music video then, Steele. Have you seen the music video, Dave?
I'm in the same exact boat as Steele. I've never heard that
song
until just this moment, and I loved it. It was
great. The last two Americans under 50 who had never heard Wrecking Ball, so you just did a public service here.
There you go.
Wow. Yeah, we're going to watch that video.
Don't watch it at work. Not safe for work.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
We're definitely going to watch that video now.
There you go.
Well, guys, this was I'm still excited for 2016. I'm even excited for 2116 as well. But it's time to close down this podcast, and we're going to close it in our traditional way with book wisdom. And Steele is going to close it in his traditional way with a poem that's going to make us feel sad.
No, Dave, I got a couple poems.
What?
Poems.
Oh.
They will make you feel sad, but there's more than one. So it's poems that make you feel sad.
Okay.
Here's the first one. This is by a great American poet, Naomi Shihab Nye. Burning the Old Year, it's called. Letters swallow themselves in seconds. Notes, friends tied to the doorknob. Transparent scarlet paper. Sizzle like moth wings. Marry the air. So much of any year is flammable. Lists of vegetables, partial poems, orange swirling flame of days, so little is a stone. Where there was something and suddenly isn't, an absence shouts, celebrates, leaves a space. I begin again with the smallest numbers. Quick dance, shuffle of losses and leaves, only the things I didn't do crackle after the blazing dies. There you go. This second one is a more positive, more lovely one. This is by Louis Zukofsky, a poet who is associated with many of the poets that I love and work on my dissertation. He wrote this one for his wife, It's the 40th poem in a book of his called Anew. No ache, love's the way to start the new year. Chant then, new year, like no ache in your ear. All the while I praise wind and love your face through above snow that melts over trees through space. Carol, no ache, like new year between trees that removed still share a few centuries.
Still, that one rhymed, man.
It did. It's got really heavy rhyme and great music in it, and it's still a good poem, Dave. And this is the one, this one's for you, Dave. This is by one of our American treasures, the poet W.S. Merwin, who's in his 80s and living in Hawaii and is just all around awesome. This poem is called To the New Year. With what stillness at last you appear in the valley, your first sunlight reaching down to touch the tips of a few high leaves that do not stir as though they had not noticed and did not know you at all. Then the voice of a dove calls from far away in itself to the hush of the morning. So this is the sound of you here. And now, whether or not anyone hears it, this is where we have come with our age, our knowledge such as it is, and our hopes such as they are, invisible before us, untouched, and still possible. To the new year, where our hopes lie before us, untouched and still possible.
I love that one. You presented a few that you might want to read, and I wanted you to read that one because it was just so hopeful and positive. I mean, I loved last year, and I hope I love this year. I think I will. And I think that poem kind of encapsulates some of that hope for the what's coming before us.
Thanks, Dave. And I think there's nothing that all of us hope for more than the Furious 7 to sweep the Oscars, as it promises to do. Vin Diesel's going to carry home his best actor. They're going to carry home the best picture, best director. Paul Walker's widow is going to go up and accept the best supporting actor. I mean,
clean daughter, sleep. His daughter. So,
okay,
it's going to be his daughter. So, there's a lot to look forward to. And if it's not nominated, at least we know that the Academy is a sham.
That little chuckle was all we needed. Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us, Aaron. It's been great to have you on and
thanks
hear your predictions for 21-16.
Yeah, important things. It's good to talk to you guys again. Have a good night, and I'm just excited for the Oscars.
Good night.
Good night.
Off the chain. It's off the chain. Welcome to this world. It's off the chain.
Like other missions could listen to like Enya and
I still love her.
Movie soundtracks and stuff. But
no, I don't listen to music or watch like movies on Sunday. So Enya is genuinely like what we listen to on Sunday. We're all ready for church and the girls are getting restless. We put Enya on and have a little dance party.
Wow. You guys are doing it right.